We are jumping in our series as we're looking at some of the big stories in the First Testament. We jump from the story last week of Abraham and the binding of Isaac. Back in Genesis 21 and 22, we jump all the way into Exodus. And so we are skipping over, I guess, or skipping through, you might say, the stories of Abraham's children. So he has a son, Isaac. Isaac has two sons, Esau and Jacob, and a lot of family drama. That family drama begets more family drama, as Jacob has 12 sons and daughters, and that is more drama as they sell one of their sons, Joseph, into slavery, or one of their brothers, I should say. And Joseph ends up in Egypt as a slave, and from the midst of darkness, he ends up becoming, by the will of God, the right-hand man of the Pharaoh. And he is able then to provide for his family in a time of famine as they seek refuge as refugees in Egypt. And that is how the book of Genesis ends. We come to the book of Exodus, where we are this morning, and we learn at the beginning that the promise of God to Abraham, that God would make Abraham into a great nation with many children, as many as the stars in the sky and the sand on the seashore, that God would bless Abraham and Sarah so that they might be a blessing to everyone they meet, that has come to pass as their progeny has become a great nation. But they have become a great nation enslaved by the fear of Pharaoh as slaves in the foreign land of Egypt. And the Pharaoh is so afraid of this blessed people that he is now killing the firstborn sons in order to do a sort of genocide birth control on this population that is growing. And it is, again, the ladies who resist, who stand for God's will, and who say, those children just come too quick. Before we can get rid of them, they come into the world. And so Moses is born, and Moses is given into the hands of God and delivered and raised in the family of the Pharaoh. And he eventually discovers who he is, and in his self-righteousness tries to right all the wrongs in one day, and then is banished for his hot-headedness. And so he is banished for having killed an Egyptian soldier in the name of justice. And he lives in the desert and has been taken in by a man named Jethro and is now a shepherd. And that is where we pick up the story of the promises of God and the people of God today.
Good morning. First, this is taken from the New Revised Standard Version of the Bible. This is Exodus 2, 23 through 25. After a long time, the king of Egypt died. The Israelites groaned under their slavery and cried out. Out of the slavery, their cry for help rose up to God. God heard their groaning, and God remembered his covenant with Abraham, with Isaac, and with Jacob. God looked upon the Israelites, and God took notice of them. Exodus 3, 1 through 15. Moses was keeping the flock of his father-in-law, Jethro, the priest of Midian. He led his flock beyond the wilderness and came to Horeb, the mountain of God. There the angel of the Lord appeared to him in a flame of fire out of a bush. He looked, and the bush was blazing, yet it was not consumed. Then Moses said, I must turn aside and look at this great sight and see why the bush is not burned up. When the Lord saw that he had turned aside to see, God called to him out of the bush, Moses, Moses. And he said, here I am. Then he said, come no closer. Remove the sandals from your feet, for the place on which you are standing is holy ground. He said further, I am the God of your father, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob. And Moses hid his face, for he was afraid to look at God. Then the Lord said, I have observed the misery of my people who are in Egypt. I have heard their cry on account of their taskmasters. Indeed, I know their suffering, and I have come down to deliver them from the Egyptians and to bring them up out of that land to a good and broad land, a land flowing with milk and with honey, to the country of the Canaanites, the Hittites, the Amorites, the Perizzites, the Havites, and the Jebusites. The cry of the Israelites has now come to me. I have also seen how the Egyptians oppress them. So come, I will send you to the Pharaoh to bring my people, the Israelites, out of Egypt. But Moses said to God, who am I that I should go to Pharaoh and bring the Israelites out of Egypt? He said, I will be with you, and this shall be a sign to you, that is I who sent you. When you have brought the people out of Egypt, you shall worship on God on this mountain. But Moses said to God, if I come to the Israelites and say to them, the God of your ancestors has sent me, and they ask me, what is his name? What shall I say to them? God said to Moses, I am who I am. He said further, thus you shall say to the Israelites, I am has sent me to you. God also said to Moses, thus you shall say to the Israelites, the Lord, the God of your ancestors, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob has sent me to you. This is my name forever, and this is my title for all generations. Exodus 4, chapters 10 through 17. But Moses said to the Lord, oh my Lord, I have never been eloquent, neither in the past nor even now that you have spoken to your servant. But I am slow of speech and slow of tongue. Then the Lord said to him, who gives speech to mortals? Who makes them mute or deaf, seeing or blind? It is not I. Is it not I, the Lord? Now go, and I will be with your mouth and teach you what you are to speak. But he said, oh, my Lord, please send someone else. Then the anger of the Lord was kindled against Moses, and he said, what of your brother Aaron, the Levite? I know that he can speak fluently. Even now he is coming out to meet you, and when he sees you, his heart will be glad. You shall speak to him and put the words in his mouth, and I will be with your mouth and his mouth and will teach you what you shall do. He indeed shall speak for you to the people. He shall serve as a mouth for you, and you shall serve as God for him. Take in your hand this staff with which you shall perform the signs, thus saying the saying of the Lord.
A big thank you to Fedora. That's not an easy reading. If you, in particular, as you look at it, you can tell it's from an ancient language. If we were writing it nowadays in modern English, probably would have a hashtag burning bush and be a lot shorter. It is a famous story. You've probably heard it. Heard it over and over. I have heard it a lot in my life. Maybe you've seen ancient artwork like this ancient mosaic of it. I myself find that I often associate this scripture with Dr. Martin Luther King, which is part of our history and our culture. that evoked with the March on Washington and the vision of a promised land and him saying that he might not get there, just like Moses, but that we would get there. I have found myself this week a little destabilized thinking about that and my association with Dr. King, as in I've heard different people evoking Dr. King, that Dr. King would kneel or not kneel at a football game, that Dr. King would be in Puerto Rico or not. And I found myself thinking, you know, I don't think that's really the question we should be asking. What would Dr. King do? We're surrounded by all of these questions, by all of these hard things, by animosity and division. I don't know about you, did anybody have a fight with anybody about, or an argument, or a passionate conversation, you could say, about kneeling or standing or football or baseball? I guess it was just me. Oh, we have one. A couple. It is a time in which we're really reactionary, I think. It's not new, is it? Been like that for a while. And yet we're quick to evoke, well, a true leader would do this. Someone who is truly doing God's will would do this. It is crystal clear, at least for the person talking. We see in the story of Moses, we see the beginnings of this man who is seen as the greatest leader of the Israelite people. And man, he's kind of a sorry example of a leader. Did you hear how many buts he said? Oh, but God, can't you send somebody else? Oh, but God, I'm not a good talker. Send somebody else. But God, you know, they'll never listen to me. Oh, but God, but God, but God, but God. Now, I don't know about you, but if I saw God burning in a bush, the last thing I would say is, oh, but God, you know. I would probably either be running the opposite direction, or I'd be on my hands and knees. And I think Moses does that. But at the same time, he can't get past his butts, his fears, his anxiety, his uncertainty, his self-doubt, his doubt in others. In fact, he's not that different than all the other people that we've read about in the book of Genesis, if you read through it. We're skipping over a lot of them. But they all have been given promises of God's presence, of God's power, of God's provision. But then they quickly doubt it. In fact, Jacob, who was blessed over and over despite his scheming and stealing and nastiness and backstabbing, towards the end of his life, he falls asleep and he has this vision of the heavens being opened and angels going up and down on what seems to be a ladder. And his response is one of great humility, because he responds by saying, I did not realize that God was already in this place. We come to the story, and the burning bush is burning before Moses gets there. It's not like God is waiting, looking around a corner and saying, oh, here he comes. He's rounding that little bend in the path. Light the bush. The bush is already burning. God is already present before Moses shows up. Moses is not going on a pilgrimage. He's going about his duties. He's taking the sheep into the desert to try to find food where there is little food and water. And along the way, he sees this bush that's burning. We're told that the angel of the Lord is there. And then we're told that Moses decides not to turn away from it, but rather to turn towards it. That he has a choice. And that then God calls to him. And this encounter happens that blows Moses' mind and changes his life and changes the course of history, you might say. All from a burning bush. All from a man who was just doing what he was supposed to do. Nothing special. Nothing complicated. Just ordinary life. It's in that encounter that God speaks to Moses, and Moses' mind is blown, and in all of his butts, oh, but this, but that. Okay, God, it sounds like a good idea, but what about somebody else? that God says, no buts. I am who I am. Moses is saying, well, who am I going to say sent me? How are they going to believe me? Can you give me a note? Can you give me like a hall pass so I can prove? And God says, I am. Revealing who God is. This name Yahweh, a word that is untranslatable. There is no one translation for this word that our Jewish brothers and sisters usually do not pronounce because it is so sacred, because it is beyond being able to be captured, whether you say it or translate it or write it. Oftentimes we say Adonai in Hebrew or Lord in English in place of saying the sacred name that contains yet can't contain the uncontainable. It is a name that means I am who I am, I will be who I will be, I was who I am who I was, I will be who I was. It is beyond time, it is beyond limits, it is beyond understanding. The clearest translation, which is still insufficient, is the phrase, I am. Who sent me? Who sent you, Moses? The one who says, I am. Jesus, in his own life, identifies himself as saying, I am. It's why he was killed. It's why he was pursued by the religious authorities for daring to be so blasphemous and so presumptuous. And yet it was the experience people had over and over with Jesus. They saw Jesus as a burning bush, that when they drew close to him, I am drew close to them. There is no one way to describe it. It has to be told in our stories. So we come to the story of the burning bush, where there's this bush that's burning but doesn't burn up. I don't know how many sermons I've heard about what kind of materials it might have been that was burning and didn't burn up. But that's not the point. The point is the experience of Moses trying to put into words his buts, what happened, things that blew his mind. Now, Moses is clearly called, right? He is called to be the leader of the people. He is called to take on the Pharaoh. He is called to lead the people to freedom. Yet he stutters and complains. He is not really an acceptable leader in terms of class, in terms of faith story, in terms of how he has lived. The irony is that he does not make it to the promised land that he tells everybody all about. He sees it from far away, which is part of what makes Dr. King's story even more pertinent in a comparison. He is called to do mighty things for a God that is beyond all might, but a God who is known in relationship, because God doesn't say, I am the most powerful thing in the world, I will smite Pharaoh and bless you. Rather, God says, I am. I am the God of Abraham, of Isaac, of Jacob, of Joseph, of Sarah, of your mother. I am the God that you know in relationship and community. I am the God that makes everything possible. Now, how many of you would say that you are called? I wouldn't usually say I'm called. I had to fill out paperwork when we moved to France for a visa, and the visa status was a vocation. I went to a foreign country not as a person, not as a visitor, not as a tourist, not as a worker, not as a refugee, but as a called person. The irony was that Christy could not work, which is why we didn't stay too long, because she was not considered called. It's not just the French government that operates that way. There's lots of governments that do. But that my job is a vocation or a calling. And as such, I could easily go to France without taking someone's job, because I don't have a job. I have a calling. Now, I have a lot of colleagues who talk that way, and they have said, well, you know, I'm above that because I have a calling. I don't need to worry about that. I have a calling. And yet, I think we get lost along the way. When I was growing up, I wanted to be lots of things. in the deepest part of my heart, I wanted to be a pastor or work in the church full time because I just loved it. I used to cut high school, not that I'm giving Maya any ideas, but I used to, well, actually could work. I'd meet you up, Maya. But I used to cut high school and go to church to hang out. The youth pastor usually would be upset that I was there. So I'd go back to school via Carl's Jr., but it was where I wanted to be. As I was growing up, I was told by the senior pastor at our church, who talked a lot about things, saying that if you are called to be a pastor, you need to try everything else because you have to do it because nothing else is acceptable for you. We talked about this in Bible study. And so I literally did try many different things, convinced that if I chose to be a pastor, that I was forcing something on God, or that I was not worthy, or something else. I had my own buts when it came to that call. And so I tried everything else thinking, well, God's call must be almost like a punishment. I felt guilty for wanting to do what God wanted. Now I tell you all that because I think we make a huge mistake in our life and in our church where we think that pastors are the ones who are called and that the only work that is called is working in the church. I used to hear people saying all the time, can you volunteer in the church and be happy while still being a teacher or working in an office? That was so unhelpful for me. I think it was well-intentioned. And if I've ever said that to you, I'm sorry. Because the reality is that we are all called. The story of Moses is our story. It's your story. What we are called to do is to say the name of God. To say that who is motivating me, that who is sending me, that is who is loving me, that is who is giving me life. And that's it. We do that with words when we have to, but I think we do it even more when we just are alive. Those people in your life who are living and alive and their life is burning, it's contagious. When you're with them, you're excited and motivated. You're turned on. Do you know who I'm talking about? Those experiences, those people that draw you in, that send you out, that make you want to join the team, to fight. Maybe you know those people. Maybe you are those people. At times, we're both. That calling from God is where we have these passions in us that God gives us, longings, deep hungers, these things that when we are in them and doing them and walking in those ways, we are filled with joy and completeness. Have you ever looked at Pete or Dave while they're doing music? That's what it looks like. Have you ever seen Fedora when she's greeting little kids? That's what it looks like. We do ourselves a disservice to think that it has to be someone else or something greater. We do ourselves a disservice when we think that there's burning bushes for Moses, but not for us. The reality is, I think there's burning bushes all the time, everywhere that we go. God came into Moses' life as a shepherd to speak to him on his terms, in his language. And I think he probably waited until Moses was ready. Maybe that bush had been burning for months. I don't know. This summer we were traveling in Europe and we did not want to spend the money for a GPS. And so we would use our cell phones and we'd get the maps on Google when we were in Wi-Fi and then you turn it off to not pay extra money. And we discovered at one point that we had not downloaded the map that we needed and we had no map. No GPS, and me being as cheap as I am, I did not want to download something. And as you can imagine, it took us a long time to get to where we were going. We did it for free, but we took a long time. It's often that we feel like we have no map when it comes to God's call. It's often that I feel that way. And yet there is a map. It's not what we expect. It might not be what we think we need, but it is given to us from the God who says, I am who I am. I will be who I will be. I will provide. I have called you. I love you.
Now, you might not see it. You might not feel it. You might not recognize it. But I want to share with you a couple instances where I saw it this week as an example or as a spurring on of you to look for those burning bushes. We had a session meeting on Thursday night, and we had a conversation. We had lots of conversations. That's what we do at session. As my daughters say, all I do is drink coffee and talk. It's my chance to do it with other people at session. And Marla came. She was sharing with the elders her idea about a ministry for caregivers. And our conversation took several different turns. And it ended up in a place that was very different than where we started. In a place where there was new possibilities that we had not imagined at the beginning of our conversation. I believe that was a burning bush. It involved different gifts and passions and thoughts of different people with a common desire to follow and to proclaim a God that cares and loves us. Later in our session conversation, we talked about a visioning thing that we want to do with our church, and we were talking about and lifting up this idea that rather than just looking to ourselves for what the church needs to be, we should ask everybody in the city. Not one person on the session said, I don't know, that seemed a little crazy. I was surprised. Trusting, that's what it is, a burning bush. Trusting that God will provide. That God will speak to us even outside of the church. Outside of the people that we know. I also saw an example of overwhelming grace that I could not have imagined. If you were here last week, we signed a big card for Temple Sinai, and I explained a little bit, maybe you heard in the news, about a hate crime that happened against our local synagogue down near First Presbyterian Church downtown, and someone had written a hateful phrase about Jews on the church, or the synagogue building, excuse me, on the day of Rosh Hashanah, New Year, and so we made a sign, and I got down there Friday to deliver it before the beginning of their most holy day, Yom Kippur, the day of repentance. And I got into the office and they were so excited. This is just a little piece of paper that a few of you signed. And the secretary got up from her desk and locked her office and said, come follow me. And she walked me through the building to a place where they had put up this other sign that they had made. They could not paint the building before their service that day, so they covered the slur with paper, butcher paper, and had people write on it. And it was hanging on the wall. And then she took the paper that we had made and hung it on the wall of their synagogue next to that other piece of paper. And said, this makes all the difference. A simple thing, that piece of paper probably cost 4 cents. Only 3 people in the church signed it, because we had lots going on. I wrote all of our names on it. Piece of cake, it just took me a few minutes. And yet the woman was almost brought to tears. A simple thing, but a burning bush. Simple conversations. Offering our questions, offering what we know, offering the skills we have, sharing the passions that we have. Things that seem trite and insignificant, yet they are burning bushes. Our world is always in need of burning bushes, I believe. Our world is always in need of the God who is, who wishes for us to be, and gives us life. And that God is always calling us and you and me. No matter who we are, no matter what skills we have, no matter what gifts we have, no matter what we do, God is calling us and sending us, even when we feel like we don't have a map, into the world. Not to have all the answers, but simply to say, I trust in the one who is. So my question for you today, or 2 questions, I guess, as we worship and celebrate,
is how is God maybe calling you, maybe calling us right now? And what are your big buts that maybe are keeping you from believing in yourself or trusting in God's voice or following through on the passions of your heart? Amen.